This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Dragnet. We'll hear The Big Blast, their story from May 17, 1951. After that, it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen and the Circus Train, his story from March 27, 1943.
Fatima Cigarettes is proud to present its Academy Award-winning radio program. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A young mother is murdered in bed while her 7-year-old son sleeps by her side. The killer was vicious and cunning. Your job? Get him. You'll be amazed when you compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
The size is the same. They now cost the same. But in Fatima, the difference is quality.
You see, Fatima is the quality king-size cigarette because it contains the finest domestic and Turkish tobaccos superbly blended. And Fatima is extra mild, with a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
So compare Fatima yourself. Fatima's now cost the same as other long cigarettes, but your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Buy Fatima. They're extra mild, with a better flavor and aroma. Smoke Fatima, the quality king-size cigarette. Fatima, best of all long cigarettes.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, July 9th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 11:25 p.m. when we got to 543 West Bixell Street. Front door.
Homicide?
That's right.
This is Friday. My name's Romero. Klein, Unit 16R.
How are you?
Partner's Thomas. He's in with the victim's mother and son. Back this way, sleeping porch.
Okay. What's the story?
Yeah, really a nasty mess. Looks like a shotgun. Victim's face is half gone.
What's the name?
Josephine Stevens, 28 years old.
What do you got so far?
Not much. Your mother's in a state of shock. Talk to the young boy for a minute. Pretty terrible. Here's the sleeping porch.
Dear God.
Yeah.
You got a little kid by her side. It knocks the props out from under you.
What do you got on it?
Seems as Josephine Stevens and her 7-year-old boy were sleeping in the bed when it happened. Haven't been able to fill it all out yet, but from what the youngster told us, it happened about 30 minutes ago.
I'd say it was a shotgun, too, wouldn't you, Joe?
Yeah, it looks like it.
You can see by the head of the bed here, it looks like shotgun pellets.
Yeah.
The screen in the door here looks like it was recently torn.
Yeah, Thomas and I noticed that, too. We made an immediate search of the area. Didn't turn up anybody. Backyard, round the side, shrubbery, didn't find anything.
Yeah.
We were careful not to step off onto the soft earth anywhere around. Didn't want a chance destroying any prints or anything.
That's fine.
Did you talk to the girl's mother at all, Klein?
Very little. She's still hysterical. Doesn't seem to know what she's saying. Couldn't tell us very much.
Yeah, well, let's step into the next room, huh?
The room's just the way we found it. Nothing out of order. Dresser drawers are all closed. Room hadn't been prowled.
No, it doesn't look like the work of a burglar or a prowler.
Well, a burglar or a prowler wouldn't be carrying a shotgun either, would he?
The only thing Thomas and I found were a cut in the screen, the gate around the side of the house there. It was open.
Crime lab been called?
Haven't had time to do it right now.
No, never mind. I'll take care of it. I want to call in anyway. Do they have a phone here?
Right in the kitchen there on that table.
Okay, thank you. I figure we could use some help, don't you?
Yeah. They're right there, you left.
Yeah, I see it. Thank you.
Hello?
2643, please.
2643? Crime lab, Alan.
This is Friday, Jay.
Yeah, Joe.
We're at 543 West Bixel. Got a homicide. We're going to need prints, photographs, a whole deal, Jay. Looks like the woman was killed with a shotgun.
Let me double-check that address, Joe. 543 West Bixel.
Yeah, that's right.
You got a phone out there?
Yeah, it's Hollywood 93199.
We'll get right on it, Joe.
Thanks. Say, Jay, could you transfer me to 2521, please?
Right.
Operator?
2521. Sanchez.
Sanchez, this is Friday.
What'd you find out there?
Oh, it's a bad one. Shotgun killing. Haven't got too much yet. We're going to have some help.
What do you need?
We need somebody to cover the area. We don't know what we got yet. Talk to the witnesses, neighbors, cover the parked cars.
Right.
Will you send out a broadcast for us? Alert all units to be on the lookout for a person or persons with a shotgun in their possession.
Take care of it right away. How many men do you think you need?
Well, at least four crews. Could you get them out right away?
Okay. Anything else?
No, I'll fill them in when they get here. Thanks a lot, Sanchez.
Right, Joe.
All right, bye.
Everything okay?
Yeah.
Klein says we could talk to the youngster.
You don't think it'd do any good to talk to Mother?
She's still in bad shape. Imagine she'll be all right in a little while, but I think you just waste your time right now.
Well, I forgot something.
What's that?
I forgot to call the coroner.
I'll take care of it for you.
Well, would you take the boy into the front part of the house for us?
Sure.
Fine. Then if you'll just call Sanchez down in homicide downtown, he'll notify the coroner for us.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Joe, you want to see something break your heart?
Yeah, what's that?
Notice the blood on the floor there, leading from the sleeping porch to this bedroom here.
Yeah. Look like small footprints, huh?
They are. Little boys.
Well, let's go in the front room.
Yeah. This is a boy, 7 years old, name's Charles.
Right. Thanks, Clay.
I'll make that call for you right away, Friday.
Hello, son.
What happened to my mommy?
I'm sorry. You better take it, Joe.
Yeah. Come over here to me, son. Charles, is that your name?
Charlie.
Well, my name's Joe, Charlie.
Yes, sir. Mr. Joe?
Well, it's Joe Friday, son.
Mr. Friday, are you a policeman?
Yeah, that's right, Charlie. Now, that other man in the uniform, Officer Klein?
Yes, sir.
He said you might be able to tell us what happened here. Do you feel like talking about it, son?
Mr. Friday, do you know what happened to my mommy?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out, son. We'd just like to ask you a few questions.
She's hurt bad, isn't she? Did she talk to you? She wouldn't talk to me. Grandma and those other policemen wouldn't let me stay in there.
Well, can you tell us what happened here?
You want me to tell you like I told the other policemen?
If you would, please.
I wish you'd let me go in and see Mommy. She could tell you a lot better than I can.
Well, she's hurt kind of bad, son. We just thought that maybe you'd tell us.
Well, we were sleeping in the bed on the back porch.
Mm-hmm.
We just got to bed, and Mommy was reading me a story. Then I heard this man at the screen door.
Did you see the man, Charlie?
No, I didn't. Mommy wouldn't let me.
Well, how do you mean, son? How do you know it was a man, then?
Well, somebody was cutting the screen at the door. I thought it was a man.
But you're not sure? You didn't see him?
No, sir, I didn't see anybody. It was dark outside.
You heard somebody cutting the screen, though, is that right?
Yes, sir. Then Mommy sat up in bed. I started to sit up, too, but she wouldn't let me. She pushed me back down and said, keep down.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember exactly what she said, Charlie?
She said, just to keep down. That's all she said.
Well, then what happened?
I heard this big gun, and Mommy fell down on the bed again. I could tell she was cut. I could see blood all over her.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to talk to her, but she wouldn't talk to me. So then I went to get Grandma.
Now, after you heard the gun, did you hear anything else?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, did you hear anybody running outside the house? Anything like that?
I don't remember, and I don't think so. I got up and went into Grandma's room. I was awful scared. I don't know why Mommy wouldn't talk to me. She always used to when I was scared.
Well, now, can you think of anything else that you might be able to tell us, son?
No, sir. I just don't know why anybody would hurt my mommy. She's so good, she never hurts anybody.
Where's your father, Charlie?
I don't know where he is. They don't live together anymore now.
Mm-hmm. How long has it been since you saw your father, son?
Just last Sunday it was. Yesterday, I guess. I see him every Sunday.
Well, do you have any idea who might want to hurt your mother?
No, sir. Nobody.
All right. What do you think, Ben?
Charlie.
Yes, sir?
Did your mother and father seem to argue with one another very much?
Before we moved here to Grandma's house, they used to argue all the time. That's when we lived in the apartment.
Is that why you moved over here, son?
Yes, sir. That's partly it. Mama had to work, and she didn't want to leave me alone here. So we moved over to Grandma's house.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your father would ever hurt your mother? Did he ever say anything about ever hurting her?
My daddy was always so good to me. He used to buy me all kinds of things. I don't think he was ever mean to anybody.
I see. Do you remember your mother ever saying she was afraid of anybody?
No, sir. She was never afraid of anybody.
How do you know that, son?
She and Grandma used to always tell me that I'm the man of the family. As long as I'm around, they're not scared of anybody.
Oh, I see.
But when you talk to Mama, you won't tell her, will you?
Tell her what, son?
She always says that big men don't cry about things. When Grandma came out on the porch, she started to cry, and she took me into her room, and she cried some more. I guess I cried a lot, too. When you talk to Mommy, you won't tell her that, will you?
No, no, we won't.
I've never really known. Is that right? Do big men ever cry?
Yes, son. They cry.
p.m. The crime lab men arrived and went to work. They found 3 shotgun pellets embedded in the wall to the right and above the head of the victim's bed. 2 additional lead pellets were removed from the bedstead above the pillow on the right side of Josephine Stevens' bed. This fact, in conjunction with the position of the hole ripped in the screen door, proved that the victim was sitting up in bed at the time of the shooting. This fact, too, showed why the 7-year-old boy lived and his mother died. Further investigation showed that the fatal shot was fired from outside through the hole in the screen door. The search of the surrounding area failed to yield the murder weapon or any additional physical evidence. The neighbors were all checked. They could add nothing to what we already knew. The few who had heard the blast from the shotgun thought it was backfire from a passing car. Units in the area of the murder picked up 14 possible suspects on the street and in the neighborhood at the time of the killing. They were all checked out and cleared of any connection with the crime. Josephine Stevens' mother, Mrs. James Edwards, was in a near state of collapse, but she managed to give us a statement. Her story corroborated that of 7-year-old Charles Stevens. Supplemental broadcasts and an all-points bulletin were put out to try and locate the killer. Ben and I drove over to 1543 East Workman Street to check out the husband of the murdered woman. Well, this is it, huh?
Yeah, White House here.
All right, let's go.
Car park and driveway.
Yeah. The hood's warm. Car's been used recently.
Yeah, you got your flashlight?
Yeah, here.
All right. The car's registered to Keith Stephen.
Yeah, come on. Lights are on inside, huh?
Yeah.
Yes?
Mr. Keith Stevens.
Yes, that's right.
Police officers like to talk to you.
Want to come in?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
What's the trouble, officer?
When's the last time you saw your wife, Stevens?
Why?
Well, when did you see her last?
Well, I was over there Sunday, yesterday. Always go over every Sunday to visit my little boy, Charlie. My wife and I are separated. That's what we agreed on.
And that's the last time that you saw her?
Yes, it is. Why?
Well, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. Your wife is dead.
What's that?
I'm sorry.
You're kidding. She was all right yesterday. There must be some mistake here.
No, sir. I'm afraid not.
Josephine Stevens. You sure?
543 West Bixell Street.
I gotta sit down. What happened?
She was shot.
Well, how? I can't believe this.
Well, we're working on it now. Somebody shot her while she was in bed.
I just saw her yesterday. How did it happen? Was it an accident?
No, sir. Somebody killed her.
How about little Charlie? He sleeps with his mother. Is Charlie all right?
Yes, sir. He's fine. He wasn't hurt at all. It was a small miracle how he came out of it, but apparently his safety was the last thing your wife thought of before she was killed.
It's just terrible. I still can't believe what you're saying is true. Who in the world would do a thing like this?
We want to know that, too. We need your help.
Well, where's my boy? I better go right over and see my boy.
He's in good hands with his grandmother. We just want to ask you a few questions, and then you can go right over and see him.
All right. You gotta get whoever did this terrible thing.
Yes, sir. We're gonna try.
Well, how is it that you happen to be up this late at night?
I just got home from work. I work the swing shift at Gibney's.
That's the steel mill down in Alameda?
Yes, that's right.
Did you work today?
Yes, I told you. I just this minute got in.
Swing shift. What hours would that be?
4 to 12.
Did you work the full shift today?
I did. You don't think I would have done this thing?
We have to check everybody.
Is there somebody out at the plant that can verify the fact that you were out there during the entire shift today?
Yes, my lead man and I always punch my time card in and out.
How do you get to work?
I drive. My car's right outside there, blue Chevy.
Do you own any firearms?
No, I don't.
You ever owned any?
No, never have. Didn't want to gun around with a boy.
Let's see.
You live here alone?
No, since the wife and I split up, I live with another fella here.
Mm-hmm. Where is he tonight?
He's out somewhere, usually home when I get here.
Do you have any idea where he might be? Does he go out much?
He goes out quite a bit. He's going with some girl. Might be at a movie or something like that.
Does he know your wife?
Well, not too well, no. I think I took him over to the house one Sunday. He met my son, Charlie, and my wife.
Try to take it easy, Mr. Stephen.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's kind of hard to take.
Yes, sir, we understand.
This man that you live with here, what's his name?
Carl Walters.
Where'd you know him from?
He advertised in the papers. He said he wanted somebody to share a small house with him. I answered the ad, and we seemed to hit it right off from the start. He's okay.
What do you know about him?
I know enough to know he's all right. I wouldn't want to get him mixed up in this.
Well, has this Walters ever been in trouble? Has he ever been arrested?
Not that I know of. He's a good guy. Fine army record.
I see. Have you ever been arrested?
No, sir. I never have.
Any kind of an arrest? Misdemeanor or anything like that?
Never.
You've never been in jail for any reason?
No, sir. Never have. I had traffic tickets, but I've never been in jail for any reason. I always paid my fines. Never had any trouble.
Have you any idea who might want to do a thing like this?
No, no one. How'd it happen? Did they break in the house?
No, it wasn't burglary or anything like that. Somebody just wanted to do away with your wife. If you can think of anybody who might do a thing like this, it'd help.
You know, we've been separated for a while. Maybe she took up with someone who'd do something like this. I wouldn't know. I can't think of anybody I know that'd do this.
I see.
She and I have had our ups and downs, or we wouldn't be apart. We argued time and again over the custody of Charlie, but nothing serious. Can't tell you what a shock this is to me.
You say that you don't own a gun. Do you know of any of your friends or hers that might?
No, I can't think of anybody.
Well, this fellow Carl Walters, what can you tell us about him?
Now, please, he's all right. He certainly had nothing to do with this.
Well, we just want to be sure to check everybody out. If you can tell us, it may save him some embarrassment.
Well, I realize you have to be sure, but please believe me, he's all right.
You say he doesn't know your wife at all?
No, just that one meeting.
You're sure he couldn't have had any part in it?
Absolutely sure.
Uh-huh. What kind of a fella is he?
Oh, average guy, I guess. Likes to swim, plays a little golf. Always wants me to go out camping or hunting with him.
Do you ever go with him?
No, I haven't so far. He wants to go on weekends, and I like to see my son on Sundays, like I said.
What does he hunt, you know?
He's not much of a hunter, really. He just likes to go out for ducks once in a while.
Does he keep his equipment here?
No, he doesn't, over at his father's house.
Does he ever hunt for anything besides ducks?
No, I'm positive about that. He's always saying how he never could shoot a deer, says he gets buck fever. Can't say I blame him.
He ever tell you what kind of a gun he had?
No, not that I recall. Still think he had a part in this?
We didn't say that.
What's his duck hunting got to do with it?
Well, when you hunt ducks, you use a shotgun.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic cases from official police files. And now, let's look at our Fatima files. Listed under K. Kelly, Nancy Kelly, famous actress. She says,
between scenes, I like to relax in my dressing room and light up a Fatima. They have a really different flavor, and they're extra mild.
Friends, more smokers now insist on king-size Fatimas than ever before. Because in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties, extra mild, superbly blended, to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories.
Quality. Even to the appearance of the bright, clean, golden yellow package. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor.
So, if you smoke a king-size cigarette, compare Fatima.
You'll find they now cost the same. But your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Buy Fatima. Smoke the quality king-size cigarette. Fatima. Best of all long cigarettes.
Tuesday morning, July 10th, 1 a.m. We continued to question Keith Stevens about the murder of his wife. He could add very little to what he had already told us. We made a thorough search of his house and garage. We searched his car. We found nothing that would incriminate him in any way. 1:37 a.m. Carl Walters, the man who Keith Stevens lived with, returned home. We retraced his steps for the night of July 9th. All his time was accurately accounted for. We talked with his father. We were told that the shotgun had not been used for about 10 months, since last duck season. We looked at the gun and noticed that it was covered with lint and had not been recently fired. We talked to the plant foreman at Gibney Steel Mill. He verified the fact that Keith Stevens worked his full shift on July 9th and did not leave his job until 12 midnight. At this point, both men were clear of any complicity in the murder of Josephine Stevens. Tuesday, July 10th, 8 a.m. We made the usual routine check of R&I of the four people involved in the case so far. Josephine Stevens, the murdered woman, her mother, Mrs. James Edwards, the husband, Keith Stevens, and his friend, Carl Walters.
Here it is, Joe. One package.
Nothing on Josephine Stevens or Ms. Edwards.
That's right. And Carl Walters is clean. He kind of makes a liar out of the husband, Keith Stevens. It's his package.
Yeah, or he forgot.
Well, let's see. Keith Stevens. Here's the arrest report, one only.
Let's see. It's 4127A.
Yeah, picked up from drunk charge. He didn't forget, Joe. This was on June 7th, last.
Yeah, let me look at that officer's statement, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Above suspect was picked up in the company of co-defendant Michael Duff, booking number 8023. Both suspects were drunk and disorderly at time of arrest. Their condition was such they were unable to care for themselves. No, he didn't forget.
Hey, Mary.
Yes, sir?
Pull this package for us, will you, please? Booking number 8023. Give us a mug if he's got one, huh?
What was that arrest date?
June 7th, 51.
Thank you.
Well, it's an outside chance.
Huh? He lied once. Maybe he'll lie again.
What do you suppose he was trying to prove by not telling us about this?
Oh.
Here you are.
Well, thank you, Mary.
It's a little bigger package, huh?
Yeah. Look, his R card. He's done time in Quentin.
Yeah. 1933, Grand Theft Auto. Did 4.5 years, paroled out in 37. Here he is, back in again on suspicion of robbery. 1946, charge released. Picked up again, suspicion of robbery, released again.
Michael Lewis Duff, alias Mickey Duff. Stevens is moving in pretty fast company.
Yeah. Look here, this is the guy, all right. Here's that last drunk arrest, see, on that we saw in Stevens, June 7th.
Yeah, Is there a mug there, Joe?
Let's see. Well, there's this one on that 211 arrest in 47.
Yeah, I see that one. It's pretty old, though. It's a little worn. Kind of hard to see.
We'll check that last arrest report on the drunk charge. Maybe we got one of those auto photo strips. That ought to do it.
I hope so.
Yeah, here we are.
Let's see. Yeah, those auto photos are good mugs, aren't they?
Yeah.
What address did he give on that last arrest?
5234 West Main. No, all these other addresses are just transient hotels. That Main Street address, the most recent, looks like the best bet.
This is probably why Stevens lied about being arrested.
Yeah, let's see if he lied about anything else. We drove over to 5234 West Main Street. It was a small two-story rooming house. We checked with the landlady, and she told us that she had a man registered under the name of Michael Duff in room 20. She told us that he had just walked out a few minutes before we arrived, saying he was going down to the corner to buy a newspaper. We identified ourselves and stated that we'd wait in his room for him. We asked her not to tell him. She went upstairs with us and unlocked the door to room 20. We made a thorough search of his place. It was a two-room apartment. I searched the living room, and Ben went over the kitchen.
Yo, come here.
Yeah.
Look here. Look, I'm up under the sink here, cradled in the gooseneck of the drain.
Yeah, shotgun.
Yep. Just a minute. It's been fired recently.
I know.
And this much fits in.
Please don't. Found him in the pocket of one of his coats in the closet there.
12-gauge shotgun shells. Where'd you find him?
In the pocket of a dress suit? That doesn't fit, does it?
Not unless he's the best-dressed hunter in town.
Sounds like he's back.
Yeah. Get your hand out of that pocket, please, officers.
What's going on?
Keep your hands out and open. Stand still. Here, Joe. You want to take this?
Yeah. What are you doing carrying a gun, Duff?
Anything wrong?
You know better than that. What'd they tell you when they paroled you?
That was a long time ago.
They haven't changed the rules.
I don't know what you're doing here in the first place.
Go on over there and sit down.
All right, if that's what you want.
That's what we want. Move. Right now, do you want to tell us about it?
About the gun?
About both of them. The shotgun here on the table and this one I got in my hand.
Well, you found that old shotgun, huh?
They found it.
I haven't used that old thing for years. Just kept it as a keepsake. Haven't fired it for a long time. Don't even have any shells for it anymore.
Except these two, huh?
I don't know where those came from.
Look, Duff, you're an ex-convict. We find two guns in your possession. Now, let's don't play games. Tell us about it.
I haven't got anything to tell you. I would if I did.
I just had a long talk with Keith Stevens.
What'd he have to say?
Never mind what he had to say. Let's hear your side of it.
You wouldn't try to kid me, would you?
Now, you listen, fellow. We just came from a house over on Bexhill Street. There's a woman lying in bed over there that took a blast from a sawed-off shotgun. You own a shotgun. It's been recently fired. You lied. You said you hadn't fired it. You said you didn't have any shells for it. Well, here they are. Now, look, they fit, don't they? Take a good look at it, mister. There's only one thing missing. Who pulled the trigger?
Let's have it, Duff.
Did Stevens tell you?
We'll ask the questions. Now, come on.
All right. I did it, but I did it for Stevens. Told me he'd give me $1,000 if I kill his wife for him. I haven't been paid yet. I'm still waiting to get paid off.
You won't have to wait any longer.
We took Michael Duff downtown together with a murder weapon. He gave us a full confession stating that Keith Stevens had offered to pay him $1,000 for the murder of his wife. He said that he and Stevens had planned it together. 1:30 p.m., Tuesday, July 10th, we drove out to pick up Keith Stevens.
What else could I do?
Is that how you justify the murder of your wife?
It was her fault. She'd have just tried to be reasonable. This never would have happened.
People settle these kind of problems every day, and they don't use a shotgun.
You wouldn't understand. Unless you got a son, you'd never really understand why I did it.
I've got a son. I don't understand.
And you don't love him like I do. Couldn't stand the thought of never seeing him, having her take him away from me.
And that's the way you want us to put it down. That you didn't want your child taken away from you, so you killed his mother.
Not exactly. She was going to take him away. She wanted him to forget all about me. She wanted him off for herself.
Did your wife tell you all this?
No, of course not. Any fool could see that's what she had in mind.
You mean just because of some argument that you and your wife had, you just assumed all this to be so?
Sure. I knew she'd never give me a break with Charlie. Isn't that what always happens?
And you never asked her how she felt? Never thought that you could stand on your legal rights? Never knew that what you're trying to make us believe seldom happens unless there's a good reason for it?
Wasn't going to let her take my son away from me. Nobody could do that.
Yes, sir, you're right. You lost him yourself.
The story you've just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On October 15th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 84, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, I'd like you to be the judge while I present our case for Fatima. Now, you've heard me say that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes. Get a pack of Fatimas and compare them with any other long cigarette. Side by side, I'll admit a Fatima looks the same as any other king-size cigarette. But when you smoke them, you'll find a world of difference. In Fatima, that difference is quality. Quality that gives you extra mildness, a much better flavor and aroma. Compare Fatima, and I'm sure you'll agree with me. Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Keith Edward Stevens was convicted of murder in the first degree and received a life sentence. He is now serving his time in the state penitentiary. Michael Lewis Duff was convicted of first-degree murder and received the death sentence. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary.
Dragnet wishes to thank Sheriff Brian Clemens of the parish of East Baton Rouge, state of Louisiana, for the appointment of Sergeant Joe Friday and Sergeant Ben Romero as honorary deputy sheriffs. Our sincere thanks to Sheriff Clemens.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portions transcribed from Los Angeles. Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next over most NBC stations.
Presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective, in person. Ellery Queen again gives you a chance to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Then, at the point where he was able to solve the mystery, he stops the play, gives you a chance to guess the criminal's name. In the studio tonight, we have as our guests Mr. George R. Crowley, superintendent of the New York, New Haven, and Hartford Railroad Police Force, and Mr. F. Beverly Kelly, director of radio publicity for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey combined shows. Mr. Crowley and Mr. Kelly have accepted Ellery Queen's challenge to solve the mystery before the solution is revealed. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective and your host for the next half hour.
Good evening. In tonight's story, we run across one of the boldest and most dastardly murders in our memory. A murder on a speeding train. And among our suspects are included a giant, a midget, and a fortune teller. I call it The Adventure of the Circus Train.
Sure glad this Chicago case is wrapped up, Inspector.
Yes, baby, it'll be good to get back to New York. Ellery, can I take it?
Yes, Dad.
Ever know Ellery to forget anything?
Here's our Pullman. Oh, who's this?
I'm the station master. May I see your tickets?
Oh, what's wrong?
What's up?
Sorry, Mr. Queen. The Army's requisitioned all available space on this train. Your reservations are canceled.
Oh, canceled. Dear.
How about the next train, station master?
Well, the earliest accommodations available are on the special section of the 11:59 tonight, Mr. Queen. It has three compartments left.
We'll take them.
I'd better tell you about it first, sir. That section's carrying Marco's Mammoth Show, the Midwest circus outfit.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You mean we have to travel with tigers and elephants and get sawdust in our hair?
Not quite, miss. Your accommodations would be in the end car. It's an all-compartment car with a small lounge and bar at the rear. Mr. Marco himself travels in that car and his business manager, John Brady.
Well, we certainly don't object to traveling with Mr. Marco and Mr. Brady, station master.
But they're not the only ones in that car, sir.
Look, if I got to double up with a talking snake, I'll walk to New York.
Who are the others?
Well, there's Goliath. He's 8 foot tall.
Goliath? The circus giant?
Yes, miss. Then there's Captain Pinky. He's a midget. And Madam Zara. She's the circus fortune teller. They're nice folks. Been with Marco's circus a long time, but I thought I'd tell you.
Ever since I was a kid, I've had a yen to travel with a circus. What do you say?
Well, we don't mind one bit, station master.
Okay, Mr. Queen, I'll fix it. Ought to be an interesting trip.
Why, this is a solid comfort.
My, this lounge back here is awfully cozy, Ellery.
Yes, we should be pulling out soon, Nicky.
Marco, I hope we're not putting you out in any way.
Oh, can't expect normal conditions in wartime, Inspector. Edward?
Yes, sir.
Edward, shut him up.
Yes, sir.
We're having a little celebration, folks.
Well, in that case, maybe we ought to get out of the lounge and go to our compartments, Mr. Marco.
Yes, we don't want to spoil any plans you have.
No, I won't hear of it. Be mighty proud if you'd all join me, in fact.
Well, I'll do what you say.
Oh, John.
Yes?
You say, did you tell him all about it?
Oh, I left the telling to you, Mark.
Folks, meet John Brady, my business manager.
Howdy, folks. Howdy,
and this is Long Joe Stebbins, professionally known as Mr. Goliath.
Hello.
Goliath.
Madam Zara, the smartest crystal gazer under the big tops.
How do you do?
And Captain Pinky, 44 years old, and you can put him in your vest pocket.
Any friend of Mark Marco's is a friend of mine.
Pass the flowing bowl, pass it around. Thank you, Edward. Well, you three must be wondering what this is all about.
We are.
As you know, I've been in show business over 50 years. Well, Mark Marco's getting too old to run a circus.
Oh, I know,
but I am. Needs younger blood. So I've just sold Marco's mammoth show to John Brady here.
Yes,
Brady. John, here's the bill of sale. Whole work signed, sealed, and delivered.
Well, thanks, Mark. And here's my advance payment in cash. $30,000.
Boy, thunder, Goliath, will you look at that? Three $10,000 bills.
I ain't never seen so much money, Captain Pinky.
Money means trouble. I smell trouble.
I smell an Indiana farm and rest for my old bones, Zara. Well, folks, drink up.
You can help, Mr. Marco.
Thank you.
1 minute to midnight. We're leaving on the dock.
How about a song for Mr. Marco?
Oh, he's a jolly good fellow. Oh, he's a jolly good fellow. Oh, he's a jolly good
fellow.
Here's your wager.
I suppose we may as well, Sergeant.
What's bothering you, Henry? Why do you want to come out here on the front platform of the car?
To clear my head, Dad. There was an atmosphere in the lounge I didn't like.
You mean them expressions of gimme-gimme on the faces of the giant, the midget, and Madam Zara?
Oh, that's only natural, son. These circus people don't see $10,000 bills every day.
Not only circus people.
Gentlemen, sir.
What's the matter, Porter?
I was just cleaning up my bar in the lounge, son.
Yes?
I guess the bell signal from Mr. Markle's compartment.
Spit the pebbles out of your mouth,
Edward. I rang his bell. There's no answer. I tried the door. It was unlocked. I opened the door and I saw...
Speak up, Edward.
I saw...
The man's scared to death, Dad. Let's go see for ourselves. Come on. Here's Mr. Markle's compartment. Dad, look.
Markle.
His head.
Bashed in.
Murder.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our story. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more, but first, Ernest Chappell with a mystery of his own.
And it bids fair to be as baffling as any mystery Ellery's been up against. By the way, folks, what's your batting average? Mrs. Neely Jarvey of Lakewood, Ohio, is frank to admit that she and her family haven't piled up a very imposing score of correct deductions, but she says they still get a big kick out of trying to decide who done it. Good for you, Mrs. Jarvey. That's what we like to hear. And here's something else we like to hear. But suppose I let you folks have it in Mrs. Jarvey's own words. She writes...
We're never without Bromo Seltzer in our home. And not long ago, when I became a volunteer nurse at our local hospital, I had just one more reason to be grateful for Bromo Seltzer's quick, effective relief. After my first evening of routine floor work, I came home with my nerves on edge and a bad headache, brought on by nervous excitement. Well, as soon as I got in the house, I took a Bromo Seltzer. And oh, what relief... I'm not so nervous and excited about my volunteer work as I was at first, but I know that I can rely on Bromo Seltzer whenever I have a common sick headache like that again.
Well, now, there you have a mighty fine piece of advice from a lady who ought to know. So the next time you have a common sick headache, try Bromo Seltzer. I bet you'll feel the same as Mrs. Jarvey about it. And say, we'd like to hear from all of you about your Bromo Seltzer experiences. Just send your letters to Ellery Queen, care of the station to which you are listening. And now, back to our story. It's a short time after the discovery of old Mr. Marco's body. The car has been locked, front and rear. Nikki has been awakened.
But, Inspector, how did it happen?
That's what we've got to figure out, Nikki. Ellery, Billy, and I were standing on the front platform from the time the party in the lounge here broke up. And we know no one from the forward cars came into our car, or left.
And the two conductors were sitting at the end of the lounge near the rear platform, Nikki, checking their tickets.
And both conductors say no one got into the car through the back.
So, Mr. Markle must have been murdered by someone in this car.
That's the size of it, Nikki.
But who? Which one?
The two conductors alibi each other, and they both alibi the porter.
So the killer must be one of the four circus people.
That nice old man. Why?
Don't you remember Brady handing Marco three $10,000 bills in front of our eyes, Nikki?
And they're not in his wallet now or anywhere in Marco's compartment.
He was bumped off for that 30 grand, Miss P.
Killer probably rapped on Marco's door. Marco let him in.
Visitor assaulted the old man, stole the money, and left Marco for dead.
But he didn't die right off. He managed to reach the porter's bell and ring it before dying.
What was the weapon, Inspector?
A man's shoe.
What?
Yes, a shoe.
A shoe big enough to ship freight in, Miss Porter.
A man's shoe. Size 22, Nikki.
Size 22? But a shoe that size, it must be the giant. Goliath must have killed Mr. Markle.
And used his own shoe, Miss Porter? And to top it off, left it in Markle's room for us to find?
No killer would be so simple-minded, Nikki. The big boy's being framed.
Only question is, by who?
Well, Dad, we better start asking questions.
Yes. Billy?
Yeah?
Call them out of their compartments, one at a time. While we're tackling each one, you search his compartment for that dough.
Okay, Inspector.
Well, son, this case is a cinch. Markle was killed for the 30 grand. So when we find the cash... we find the killer. Oh, Mr. Glass. Mm-hmm. Sorry the sergeant had to wake you.
Oh, what time is it for crime at his sake?
Ellery, he's hobbling.
You'd hobble too, Nicky, if you were wearing only one shoe.
How come you got on only one shoe, Mr. Glass?
Oh, darn if I know, Inspector. When I went to bed, I put my shoes in that little doojigger on the floor of the compartment.
I know.
It's our little closet, you know, yeah. That the porter can open from outside and take out your shoes and shine them during the night.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, sir, just now Mr. Beale comes fetching me, and I look for my shoes, and that shoe thing, doggone if somebody ain't stole one of my shoes. What am I going to do? It's the only pair I got.
We hit Pittsburgh in the morning, Mr. Clive, so we'll send out a pair of shoes for you then.
Huh. Ain't a shoe store in Pittsburgh or anywhere else carries size 22. Inspector, what'd you want me for?
Come into Marco's room, Goliath, and I'll show you.
Sure.
Ellery, I can't look.
Stay out in the car, Dinicky.
Well, where's Mr. Marco, Inspector? What's under that piece of newspaper?
This?
Mm-hmm.
Your shoe, Mr. Goliath.
Well, I'll be... What's blood doing all over? What's under that blanket?
Mr. Marco, he was murdered tonight with your shoe.
Murdered?
What happened in there?
Goliath fainted.
Henry, revive this 8-foot key man.
Right, Dad.
And Nicky, call John Brady in here.
Hobbling too.
Somebody stole one of my shoes.
From your shoe compartment, Mr. Brady?
That's right. I found two shoes in it, all right, but one of them's a woman's. Here, look. Hey, what's going on? Hey, Mark, you in there?
Just a moment, Mr. Brady. Nicky, is this woman's shoe Mr. Brady just found in the shoe receptacle yours?
No, Inspector. Must be Madam Zahn.
Nicky, you better go fetch the Zahn woman.
All right.
Suppose you go in now, Mr. Brady, and see Mr. Marco.
I don't get all this. I...
Marco. Marco.
Put the blanket back, Ellery.
Right, Dad.
But who? Why?
The $30,000 you handed Marco tonight, Mr. Brady. That's why.
Inspector, Madame Zara's hopping mad about her shoe, and I mean hopping.
I don't care for jokes, if you please. Mr. Brady, is this your shoe? I just found it in my shoe compartment, and one of mine is gone.
Let me see. Yes, sir. That's my shoe. Here's yours.
Thank you. What was I awakened in the middle of the night? Has anything happened to Mr. Marco?
Why do you ask that, Madame Zara?
Yes, of course. Mr. Marco is lying under that blanket. He's dead, isn't he?
Yes, Madame Zara. Look.
I should have warned him.
You knew Marco was going to be knocked off?
Before retiring, I looked into my crystal ball. It never lies. I saw an old man lying there dead. Now I realize it was Mr. Marco. An old man. Blood on his head.
Don't mind her. She always talks like this.
You saw this in your crystal ball, you say?
With blood on his head.
Did you also see Marco's murderer in your magic ball, Madame Zara?
No. But I could.
Really?
If the conditions were right, yes, Mr. Queen.
Oh, Clara. Seeing murders in a hunk of glass. Zara, go back to your room. You too, Mr. Brady.
Very well, Inspector.
Crystal ball. Where's Vivi? In the name of Houdini, isn't he back with that 30 grand?
Haven't you forgotten someone, Inspector?
Who, Nicky?
Captain Pinky, the midget.
Oh, the midget couldn't have done it. He's too tiny.
He could have stood on something, Dad, and that big heavy shoe would be a murderous weapon even in the hands of a child.
Mr. Marco, what's all the excitement about? It's Captain Pinky. Hello. What the devil's going on? Why is everybody rushing around like crazy?
It's an unusual trip, Captain Pinky. By the way, anybody swipe your shoes?
My shoes? Heck no. What would anybody want with my shoes? But blast it all, what's happened?
Mr. Marco's been murdered, Captain.
Mr. Marco? Murdered?
Dear, he's crying.
Midgets, giants, crystal balls.
Inspector.
Vivi, well, where'd you find the money?
I didn't find it, Inspector.
You did?
I searched every compartment, no dough.
Could you find your head?
Huh?
Where are we now?
A half hour out of Fort Wayne, Indiana.
At the next stop, wire Pittsburgh to have some detectives waiting for us when we pull in tomorrow morning. And give this car and everybody in it a vacuum cleaning, Bailey. Even if the Pittsburgh boys have to go to New York with us.
Very well, sir.
Yes, bar. I'll show you how to solve this case, Ellery. Find that money, and you've got Marco's murderer.
Philadelphia.
Time's keeping Bailey and those Pittsburgh men. Still searching after 10 hours. The money must be in this car.
Dad, I've got it.
Where the money is, son?
No, I mean the explanation for that shoe incident.
Yeah?
Killer wanted a weapon that couldn't be traced to him. So he stole one of Zara's shoes from her receptacle.
But realized it was too light as a weapon.
So he rifled Brady's shoe receptacle.
And then decided he wouldn't use either one's. He'd use Goliath's shoe. That would make a weapon.
So he stole Goliath's shoe.
And then putting back Mr. Brady's and Madame Zard's.
He made a mistake and mixed them up.
Inspector Queen.
Huh? Oh, Goliath.
How much longer do I have to walk around in my socks? I want my shoe.
We're checking it for fingerprints, Mr. Glass. You'll have it back by the time we reach New York.
Well, would you wash the blood off?
Sure, sure, Mr. Glass.
Right.
Harry, I made up my mind. I'm arresting Zara.
Why Zara, Dad?
She knew Marco was dead, the only one who did. How could she have known unless she bumped him off?
Well, that is a puzzle, how she knew. Dad, she claims she might see the criminal in her crystal ball. Why not call her bluff?
See whom she accuses.
That's an idea. Okay, we'll try it.
I have a hunch Madame Zara has something up her sleeve, and it isn't a crystal ball.
Madame Zara, why is it you people can't ever do anything in the light?
We consult other worlds. Light is a disturbance. I must have darkness.
Focus, focus. Conductor.
Yes?
Switch the lights off here in the lounge. But tell Sergeant Billy to have both ends of the car watched.
Yes, sir.
You will all join hands.
This is silly, Ellery.
She knows it's silly, too, Nikki. Zara's trying to tell us something, using the seance as a cloak.
There go the lights.
I must have quiet, or my crystal will tell me nothing. Come. Appear. You who shed Marco's blood, appear in the crystal of truth.
Ellery, it's getting a faint glow.
Phosphorus, Nikki. Quiet.
The one who spills the blood of old men, he takes shape. His face, it comes out of a mist. In a moment now, I see him. I see him.
Much obliged, Madame Zara. Who done it?
The spiller of blood is...
Madame Zara, why do you stop?
Time.
What's the matter?
Turn on those lights.
Ellery, do you think she...
Here are the lights. Zara.
She's sitting so still.
Zara, come out of that now.
She's in one of her trances.
Oh, phew, I thought she was dead, Mr. Brady.
Gosh, Captain Pinky, so did I.
Wake up, Zara.
Thank goodness.
Whose face did you see in that thing?
I must not tell you. Not yet.
Oh, and why not yet?
The time isn't right. I... Perhaps later.
Madame Zara, you're a first-class fake.
Fake? I'm not going to stay around here and be insulted.
All of you, back to your compartments.
I don't think this,
Inspector. So that's that, Ellery.
Well, Inspector.
Oh, really? Well?
Boy, am I pooped.
Find the money, Sergeant?
Those Pittsburgh guys and me, we've gone over this car three times. No dough.
What? Billy?
Look, Inspector, we tore those blame compartments practically apart. You saw how we searched this lounge, the bar, the porter's pantry, the light fixtures, the radio, the front... Well, you want me to go on?
How about the people, Sergeant?
Yeah, head to toe. Clothes, luggage, cigarettes. We even examined Sarah's crystal ball. No, we searched the two conductors and the porter, too. No dog.
Meaning you're a crook's idea of Santa Claus.
Huh?
Start all over again. I want that $30,000 before we reach New York.
We're in. End of the line. Ellery, where do you suppose that stolen money is?
I can't imagine, Nikki. Poor Dad.
That must be the inspector's own squad waiting on the platform.
Now, is everybody here?
Yeah. Brady, Goliath, Pinky.
Where's Madame Hocus Pocus? That Zara woman.
She isn't here, Inspector.
But you must know we're in. The train stopped.
That's up to now. We need to get her out here.
Okay. Hey, Zara. Inspector.
Nikki, don't look.
Dead. Zara's been bumped off.
Head smashed in with a crystal ball.
Billy, hold everybody.
Right. Nobody wait.
Who'd have thought?
But why, Madame Zara?
It's clear now. We wondered how Zara knew about Marco's being dead. Don't you see? Zara must have spied on the murderer in the corridor last night. She must have seen the killer go into Marco's room with Goliath's shoe.
And why didn't she tell him?
Because she had her own axe to grind, Nikki. The seance was a veiled threat to the killer. She was warning him she could give him away if she chose.
So that he'd split the 30 grand with her. But instead, he split her head open.
Wait a minute. Of course. Now I see it all. We've been blind.
Ellery.
Been destroyed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crowley and Mr. Kelly. In a moment, you'll learn what the correct solution is. But first, the search for an honest man has come to an end in the person of our own Ernest Chappell.
Oh, me. What Ellery undoubtedly means is that I'm not going to make a single claim for Bromo Seltzer that isn't absolutely true. I'm not going to tell you that it'll do all your errands and finish your housework for you. But I do say there's just nothing better than Bromo Seltzer for common sick headaches. You know the kind, pounding head pain, jumpy nerves, upset stomach. Well, Bromo-Seltzer fights headache like that three ways. You get effective relief. Quickly feel more like your old self. So be prepared. Keep Bromo-Seltzer handy where you work, as well as at home.
inside. Come on. Boys, no one gets in till this is over. All right, sit down, you people.
Okay, Inspector.
Here's the way this case stacks up. We know the killer wanted a weapon that couldn't be traced to him. So what did he pick? Somebody else's shoe. Mark that. Somebody else's shoe. So whatever shoe or shoes he stole last night belonged to innocent people. Not to the murderer.
Makes sense to me, Ellen.
Hush, Nicky, I want to follow this.
Whose shoes were stolen last night? Madame Zara's. So she's innocent. Mr. Brady's. So he's innocent. And finally, Goliath's. So he's innocent. Who's left who could be the guilty man? Only Captain Pinky.
Captain Pinky, where'd you hide that doll?
But I didn't kill Mr. Marco.
Dad, haven't you left out one possibility?
What possibility, son?
That the murderer wanted you to think just what you do think. That the crime was committed by the one person whose shoe was not involved.
He deliberately involved all the shoes but Captain Pinky's.
He was framing Pinky?
I'm afraid so, Dad. The big point of this case is one you made yourself repeatedly. That to find the killer, we had to find the money he stole.
But we didn't find the money, son.
And why didn't we?
Because it wasn't in the car.
But it was in the car, Dad. It had to be.
Hurry, the car was practically demolished. Everybody and everything in it was searched.
That can't be, Dad, or the $30,000 would have been found. Obviously, then, one place was not searched. So that place is where the missing money must be.
What place? Where didn't we search, Maestro?
Did you search the weapon, Sergeant?
A wench.
The weapon that killed Marco?
Who'd ever think of searching the weapon?
Exactly. That's what the killer figured, too. That we wouldn't dream the hiding place of the money was the very shoe which bashed poor Marco's head in.
But, Ellery, what good did that do him? How could he expect to get hold of the money again? That shoe was a murder weapon held by the police.
Therefore, Nicky, the murderer could be only one person, the owner of the shoe to whom it would eventually be returned.
Eventually? Goliath asked for his shoe even before we reached Penn Station. And I just gave it to him. Goliath, take that murder shoe off.
Oh, you're wrong. I didn't do it.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no.
Come on, Dad.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Get this tugboat off of me.
I didn't do it.
Really? Tear out that shoe, Lanny.
Yes, sir. Here they are.
The $3,000 bills.
Clever crime, Goliath. Because who'd be foolish enough to use his own shoe as a murder weapon and then leave it behind to be found? You knew we'd believe you innocent. You knew we'd therefore return the shoe with its hidden money to you.
But there's one thing Goliath didn't know. He didn't know he was traveling with Ellery the Giant Killer.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Mr. George R. Crowley and Mr. F. Beverly Kelly for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. And we have for both Mr. Crowley and Mr. Kelly a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, an autographed copy of my new mystery novel, There Was an Old Woman, just out this week, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Oh, Ellery, I certainly enjoyed that story. I bet you can't top it next week.
I'll take that bet, Chappie, and I'll tell you what it's about in just a moment.
Okay, that gives me time enough to introduce my friend and your friend, the one and only educated train known to man, the talking Bromo Seltzer train.
Fight, headache, three ways.
Bromo Seltzer.
Yes, you can't beat that for good sense. Fight headache three ways with Bromo Seltzer. You see, common sick headaches often affect you three ways. Pain in the head, jangling nerves, and upset stomach. But
Bromo Seltzer quickly relieves that pain in your head.
Bromo Seltzer helps settle jumpy nerves.
Bromo Seltzer helps settle upset stomach.
You see what I mean? Three-way misery, three-way relief with Bromo Seltzer. Use it only as directed on the label. For frequent or persistent headaches, see your doctor. For common sick headaches, do as millions of others do. Use tried and true Bromo Seltzer.
Fight headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer.
Well, now, Ellery, we'll add house for next week. You got something nice and cheerful?
Very, Chappy. In fact, it's a story about a perfect gentleman. That is perfect, except for one little obsession.
Yeah, what's that?
He wants to murder his wife.
Pleasant guy.
So, Chappie, you better listen again next Saturday for the adventure of The Human Weapon.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop travels to Cheyenne, Wyoming, where Parks Johnson and Warren Hull will interview a Flying Fortress crew just back from bombing Germany. Consult your local paper for the time and station. Music for The Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul. Production is directed by Bruce Cannon.
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the show for this week. You can find more from Dragnet, Ellery Queen, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio, including thousands of other old-time radio episodes at RelicRadio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is working there as well. And don't forget to hit that donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. It's how this is all made possible. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.